If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon. You've tuned into Radiance by Design, and it's unusual, but I have a guest on, a guest who is one of the keynote people of the Dowsers, West Coast Dowsers Conference, and who's done some very strong pioneering research in dowsing and energy connections to all aspects of life, whether it's water or whether it's your inner self and your self-empowerment. So he's a radiator in himself, I think. And so, Harold McCoy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Veronica. I'm happy to be here.
I am glad you're here, too. Now, you've been doing dowsing research for a long time, and I know you started off in the military. You weren't in the military when you started it, were you?
No, actually, I knew about dowsing, you know, when I was just a little boy on the farm back here in northwest Arkansas. And back in those days, if you wanted to dig a big well, you did it with a pick and shovel, and nobody's going to start digging the big hole in the ground unless somebody said there was water there.
That's for sure.
So every community had what we call the old water witcher. And they'd get this guy out there, and he'd walk around with a forked stick, and he'd say, okay, dig here. And the amazing thing was that you always found water where he told you. So.
And they're still doing that, do the water witchers, eh?
Oh, yeah, I do that. I've done many, many water wells. Yeah.
So did you do that as a little boy?
Well, yeah, that's the first time I ever tried to do it, and it worked for me. So, you know, just the first time I ever tried to do it, we had the old water witch come out and to douse a well. We didn't know it was called dowsing back in those days, but it was just water witching. And when he marked on the ground, said, dig here, you'll find water, and he just stowed the stick over there because, you know, he had cut a stick from a peach tree, and they dry out, they'll break. So you need a fresh stick every time. And so when he got out of sight, I picked it up and walked back and forth the way and held it like he did. Well, sure enough, it went down. Same place. And that just kept me entertained for, oh, 3 or 4 days.
I bet it did. And then you got hiring yourself out at 8 years old. How old were you?
Well, I wasn't hiring myself out. I played with that for a while. I just knew that it worked. And, you know, when I was 17 then, I joined the Army and I stayed 24 years.
Oh, my.
So,
tour of duty was long. Well, tell me that, did you douse while you were in the Army? Were you a water witcher in the Army?
No, I didn't. Probably never even thought about dowsing from the time I was that child until I retired. And then I bought 75 acres out here and didn't have any water on it. And it just occurred to me that that used to work for me. So I found a forked peach tree and cut a fork out of it and walked around and found and doused my own well and had it drilled. And it's the most beautiful vein of water you've ever seen.
Wonderful. Now, I was reading some of the stuff, and I've heard you talk before. Explain to people how you think it works. And I know what I read was every dowser thinks it works however they think it works.
You ask 100 dowsers, you probably get 100 different answers. And I've heard old dowsers say, well, it's the affinity between the body, which is 80% water, and the water, you know.
Well, it makes sense, sort of, doesn't it?
Well, it does if you don't analyze that. I can douse a map and find a vein 1,000 miles away. So there'll not be much affinity between me and that water 1,000 miles away.
So you mean you take the fork stick over a map?
Well, I use a pendulum normally.
Okay.
Yeah, a pendulum.
I pendle with a tea bag a lot.
Well, that's good. anything on the end of a string or whatever, that, you know, it'll work.
So so what did I read is that you had a different interpretation. You thought that the mind.
It's mind phenomena. That's what it is. You know, we don't know anything about the universe.
Right. Well, we try to.
But we can actually tap in. We can, you know, if I'm looking for water, I put that thought out there. I'm looking for this, or I'm looking for whatever. And in the system, what I call my system, just lets me find it, you know. If you've listened to me talk, you heard about the harp story.
Yeah, but tell that. That's a great story.
You know, I was president of the American Society of Dowsers for 4 years, and I was on the board for 8 years, and my name was in the journal. You know, they publish a quarterly journal. My name and phone number was in there, and anyone who lost anything, they always called the president, right? But I got a phone call from a lady in Berkeley, California, and she told me about her 9-year-old daughter who was playing a harp in a Christmas musical. It was a very valuable harp, and it was a 4-night concert. On the third night, someone went to the theater and stole the harp. So 2.5 months later, the cops had given up on it. This is a well-known psychologist there in the Bay Area, and she taught psychology to medical students at a medical college in San Francisco. And so she called me and asked me if I would douse and see if I could find the harp. And I said, okay. And when I'm talking to her, I'm dowsing, I'm just asking, is the harp still in that area? And my pendulum told me yes. And I said, okay, send me a street map of Oakland and Berkeley. So a day or so later, FedEx came up my driveway with this big old street map of all the streets in Oakland and Berkeley. And I laid that on the dining room table, and I'm just looking for the intersection. She sent a picture of the harp, and I just asked the question, is this harp in the area represented by this map? And it said yes. So I just got a yardstick and put it on the left side of the table. And as I'm coming across, I'm asking, I'm looking for the intersection nearest the harp. So when I'm getting across there, and this yardstick, pretty soon my pendulum said here, and I drew a line down. And I got to the top of the line, I'm coming down, and again, when the edge of the yardstick gets over the intersection nearest the harp, give me a yes, and pretty soon it said yes, and I drew another line, and that X just happened to be in the center of an intersection. So I just mentally placed myself, and I'm sitting in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and this is in Oakland, California. And I just mentally placed myself in the center of that intersection, and I looked up one street, and I just asked, is that harp up this street? And it told me no. I turned. Is it up this street? Yes. Is it on the left side of the street? No. On the right side? Yes. Just so yes and no question, you know, questions that begin answered with a yes or no, you can find out almost anything. And so anyway, I said, okay, it's on the right side of the street. I'm going to start counting houses. The first house is number one, the next house is number two, et cetera, et cetera. And I started counting. I said, is it number one? Told me yes. And I just got a flash when that happened. This happens frequently when you're dowsing or doing this kind of work. I just, in my mind's eye, seen two people carrying the harp into a house from a pickup truck. And so I called the lady and I told her, well, I think it's in this house. I told her the intersection and the corner house. And she said, well, I'm going to drive down there. It's not too awfully far from here. I'm going to find out what kind of neighborhood. So she drove down, and after a while she called me back and said, well, that's not too good a neighborhood, but there's a pickup truck sitting in the driveway. So she really thought I was on to something. And I told her, well, I don't know how you're going to find find out if they got your harp. You just can't go up there and knock on the door. So what she did, she called the detective that had been working on the case, and she said, hey, somebody seen my harp being carried into this house from a pickup truck. And the detective said, okay, get a sworn affidavit from that person. We'll go check it out. Well, I'm in Arkansas, and they wouldn't have believed any sworn affidavit that I've got. So the next thing she done, out of all the blocks in Oakland and Berkeley and houses, she made 6 posters in the had a picture of the harp on a poster. It said, reward, this harp was stolen December 17th and was last seen in this neighborhood. She put one on a block, right down one block from this house on that corner, one right across a catty corner on that block, and she put 4 right on the corner facing the house. 4 of those. And so she got calls from this guy, and anyway, they recovered the harp.
So did they just give it up?
Hmm?
Did they just give it up, the people that had had it in their house?
Yeah, the, you know, she, they never would tell her where they lived, because she called, this guy called her and said, oh, my neighbor bought a harp. He didn't know it was stolen, blah, blah, you know, we've seen your poster. And that was the guy that got the harp, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they made arrangements to meet him at a Safeway store, which was only two blocks from his house. And they were going to give you the reward and you give us the harp. He said, okay, but if I see any cops around, you'll never see me or the harp again.
Hmm.
So anyway, they drove up to that Safeway down by the dumpster, just some landmark, and waited 30 minutes or so, and here come a small guy bringing the harp out. The big guy's not going to show up. So anyway, that harp was still in almost perfect condition and still almost in tune. It was just, so they got the harp back.
Wow, that's wonderful.
And, you know, the reason I say that's mind phenomena, you know, that's impossible. Those things are totally impossible to do. I mean, how can you explain that? You can't, you know, I teach a lot of workshops, and I tell my students that everything that I'm going to teach you is totally impossible by all established scientific standards. And there are no scientific standards for this kind of stuff.
No, because science doesn't deal with that, do they?
No. And
do you think it's a little bit like remote viewing? I mean, it's a different aspect of remote viewing?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think, it's sort of like that because and I'm sitting back here and I can see, you know, I had a flash of two guys carrying that harp, so that's got to be remote viewing.
Mm-hmm.
And
as far as figuring out how it works, it is a part of all of that, isn't it? Like, were you a very intuitive child? Were you already very intuitive?
No, I don't think so.
So when I was reading about your healing style as well, and you're talking about the mind, and I'm jumping around a little bit, but I want to tie it together eventually, but you're talking about the mind inside of us and the impact we have on, for example, water systems.
Sure.
Or healing other people and so on. I really love that. It's like from within our mind, we literally can create.
It is. You can connect.
Yeah. So why don't you talk about, well, whichever way you want to go, I'd love you to tell about the style of your healing, which I thought was wonderful. It's a little like you're in a surgery and you have all this equipment.
Yeah, it is.
But that's in your mind, right?
Yeah, it's all in my mind, and I have all these imaginary tools. I'm a mechanical person. I can rebuild car engines. I was a ham radio operator. I built my own linear amplifier. I know about those kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
You know, mechanical and electrical. And if I can figure out how to fix it with my hands, I can go in there with my mind and fix it.
Hmm.
And because energy follows thought.
Right.
And we had a two-year research project that was funded by the National Institutes of Health. And what we were doing was removing brain cancer, glioblastoma, brain cancer, remotely.
Wow.
You know? And they just wanted to see if that worked. And we helped a lot of people, I'm sure. They haven't released that study yet because I think we were too good. And they didn't.
So when was that?
That was two or three years ago.
Huh.
Yeah.
So if you started to douse when you got your 75 acres out there in the Ozarks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so how did you get to the point where you could do the taking your tools into your creating in your mind? You know, what, can you tell us something about your personal journey then?
Yeah, well, you know, I was, like I said, I was in the military for 24 years. And the last half of that, I was in military intelligence.
Hmm.
And in military intelligence, you get a little piece of the picture here and a little piece there, or a little piece of the puzzle here and a little piece there, and try to build a whole picture around what the enemy's doing, you know, what their plans are, whatever. So when I doused my well and I had it drilled and it was just perfect, I got curious, what is this power? How is that possible? You know, and I just got curious, and I just started doing some research on what else can my mind do? And I always thought it was a function of the mind and not the affinity of the water, but, you know, just of the mind. And so I started, I heard about the American Society of Dowsers,
mm-hmm.
and I joined that organization. And the very first the very first, they publish a journal. The very first journal I got had a couple of stories in there that I just could not believe. I couldn't, you know, it was beyond my, they never taught me that in the Army, I'll tell you. Anyway, one of the stories was about map dowsing. And I wondered, how can you douse a little piece of paper here and find something on the ground, you know, miles away? So I never discarded it. I just sort of filed it back. In fact, I started having my kids go out and hide stuff in the backyard, and I was dowsing, and I was getting pretty good finding them, whatever they hid out there.
Hmm.
But the other story that really I couldn't believe was in there, this guy wrote a story, and he said he really needed a water source, and he'd had the well driller to come out and drill some, you know, a couple of three dry holes and didn't hit any water, but he really needed water, and he heard about dowsing, so he got this old dowser to come out. And he said the dowser was walking around there dowsing, and he found a great underground vein of water, marked it on the ground. Then he went to his pickup truck and got a crowbar and a hammer. And he said he drove that crowbar right down over the vein that he had marked on that on the ground there that he had found. And then he hit that crowbar toward the well, and he said the water turned and went into the well, and the well filled up. Well, it was dry hole. And I said,
oh, my gosh.
I said, how could that be possible? You know, how in the world is that possible? But again, they wrote that as the truth. And I, you know, and again, I don't know what's pulling the stick down. So I just didn't discard it. I had it in the back of my mind. So the very next journal that came out, somebody had written a story about that. Said, you don't have to go out there and drive a crowbar in the ground. All you got to do is draw that person's property on a piece of paper, just a rough draft of that person's property, and put a dot on there and say, this is the dry well. Then you ask, is there a vein of water in that area that I can divert into the well? If your pendulum tells you yes, then you go around the edge of that the mouth that you've drawn and find out where the water is entering the property, and then just mark it all down on there. Now you got the vein marked on there, and you got the dot that represents the well. So then, now this is what he was writing, and I was just reading it, and I wasn't believing anything I was reading, but anyway, it says, then you put the tip of a ballpoint pen right on that vein that you marked on that piece of paper, and then hit it with another ballpoint pen toward that dot on the mouth. But it said, a mile or 1,000 miles, that vein will turn and go into the well.
Wow.
And I said, man, what kind of an organization have I joined here anyway? But, you know, I just, they wrote that as the truth. That little journal, it's a good little journal. And so, well.
What's the journal called again?
It's the Journal of the American Society of Doubters.
Okay.
And we also publish a journal here at the Ozark Research Institute, just the Journal of the Ozark Research Institute.
And what is the Ozark Research Institute? Is it studying the same stuff?
That's an organization I started 16 years ago.
Obviously, it's for research.
It's what?
I said it's obviously for research.
Yeah, that's what it is. But anyway, getting back to this dowsing story, and anyway, I just couldn't quite believe that. But I just filed it back. And about that time, my daughter had bought 3 acres up on mountaintop, about 16 or 17 miles from where I live. And when they moved into that house, she discovered that she didn't have enough water, that they could all take a shower in one night, and she couldn't do one cycle of wash, you know, wash and rinse and all that. The well would go dry. And this had a 420-foot drilled well, but it just did not have any water. The pump was down, it's a submergible pump, and it was down there 400 feet, so what that's supposed to do is pump up to a pressure tank, and, you know, when the pressure gets to where it's supposed to be, the pump will shut off. But this didn't have enough water to pump that pressure up. So she was down at my house one day really complaining about, said, we spent all of our money for the property, and now there's no water up there, and I don't know if there's any water on that mountaintop or not. You know, just really discouraged. And, you know, Dad don't like to see his daughter discouraged, so I said,
of course not, yeah.
I said, no sweat, Joyce. I've discovered how to fix your well. And so I told her about it, and I didn't, you know, she didn't believe it either. But I got to thinking about that evening, and I thought, well, what have I got to lose? So I drew a map of her house, of her that property, and I just labeled it. I said, this is Joyce's property. And then I asked my pendulum, is there a vein of water in the area represented by this map that I can divert into the well? And it told me yes. So I went around the edge, and I found out where this thing was entering the property and marked it all the way down. And I put a dot on there where the well was. So feeling really silly, sort of, put the ballpoint pen on the vein I'd marked on the well, on the underground, on the vein I'd found. And then I hit it with another one towards the dot on the map. And I really hit it. I'm telling you, I just don't know how many times I hit it. But I thought, well, if it's going to work, that ought to do it. About 20 minutes later, my daughter called. She said, Dad, have you been messing with my well? I said, yeah, did it work? She says, I don't have any water at all now.
Ah!
Great. So something happened. And I said, well, I'll come up tomorrow morning, and we'll see if I can figure out what happened. So I went up, and I was doubting that. Where I thought the vein was, I didn't see it at all. But I walked on over a little ways, and I found that underground vein that I just knocked it over there, I think. Anyway, just by yes and no answers, I found out which direction the vein was flowing and where would be the best place to start the diversion. And so I drove my crowbar in there. This time I'm going to do it, you know, manually. Mm-hmm. And I got it driven in there. And then before I hit it, I just asked the pendulum, how many times should I hit this to make the vein go into the well? And they told me 6 or 7. So now then, before I hit it, I projected my mind down in that water. You know, an underground flowing vein of water is like an above-ground little creek. So I could see it down there. You know, and this is stuff's all imagination anyway. And so, okay, now then I'm going to hit this bar. So I hit it. It looked like the vein just kind of turned, started going toward the well. And the last time I hit that, the 7th time, it looks like the vein just went right into the well. So, you know, not understanding anything that I was doing, I was just going by directions that they had written in the journal. And I said, okay, let's wait about 20 minutes and see what's happening, because I don't know what's going on down there. And about 20 minutes, I got my dowser on, walked across there, and sure enough, looks like that vein was going right into the well. Hmm. So I said, okay, let's go, you know, turn some water on and see what's happening out here at the pump. So we went in the kitchen and turned on the water, full blast, and she hasn't had any water, so she don't want any water to go down the drain that she hasn't used. So she got all these pans, filled the pans up, the water just kept running, and she was totally amazed. And we went out to the well house, and that pump was down there 400 foot, and that thing was pumping up to that pressure tank and shutting off at about 50 pounds per square inch. And as the water went down about 30 pounds, the thing would come back on, pump back up. That's how you get a continuous flow of water. That's how those submersible pumps work. And that thing has, it's never been dry since, and you cannot pump it dry. Mm. It's the most amazing thing. So when you do something with intent and it works, so who cares if you understand how it worked or not?
Right. I agree with you. So you've always used intention as well.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
You know, talking about water, you've done a lot of research about detoxifying water as well and making a difference in that. Can you talk about that?
Well, I've done that. You can, a friend of mine whose name is Raymond Grace, you might have heard of him.
Yes, I have.
He is really good at that. And I almost leave that to him, but I do. I can, I charge up my own water. If you get bottled water, a lot of times it doesn't have any energy,
mm-hmm.
and you can charge that up just with energy. You can fix contaminated water sources so you can make them drinkable, you know, just by energy.
Do you think, how would you do it? Like people listening, if we wanted to go out and charge up a toxic flow of water.
Okay,
I think
you can do that to water. You can do it with toxic waste dumps. You can do, you know, whatever. If you just get enough people, you know, if I could get, and I don't know how many it would take, But just stand around that lake, sit around that lake, meditative state, just focus energy in there with the intent of the contaminant of a change of one molecule of that contaminant, and that would change the whole contaminant.
Hmm.
And we did that one time here. We we had a professor come up from Lamar College in Texas. She set up a little lab. She bought a spectrometer, and she brought a bucket of benign bacteria. So she set this up, and if everything was equal, the bacteria would grow at the same rate. It was all in the same room. We had 10 vials of bacteria in this spectrometer. And so now what I'm going to do, we have a Tuesday night group and that meets, and this is Tuesday night. They'll be coming in here pretty quick. But anyway, I told them, okay, now we're going to try to affect the growth of that bacteria in that little lab we got set up. So she had all those vials numbered, 1 through 10, and she had a little deal with 10 marbles in it, and they were all numbered. So I had somebody pick out 3 numbers. And so like 1, 5, and 7, whatever they might have been. So we all focused on those to retard the growth of that bacteria in those vials that corresponded to those numbers, mm-hmm. 3, 5, and 7.
Mm-hmm.
And we just focused, just mental, just focused. And the next morning, she came in, this professor, she just, after she got the lab set up, she just left and went to the hotel. Next morning, when she came back in, she went into the little lab. She said, oh, you guys focused on 1, 5, and 7. You know, you could tell we had retarded the growth of that bacteria.
Hmm.
Just with thought.
Hmm.
And, you know, there's been other experiments like that. A guy whose name was Terry Ross, who was one of the best-known dowsers in the country, I guess. Him and a scientist, who worked at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, set up a research project. Terry was in Pennsylvania, and this scientist was, like I say, in Ohio. So they had a vial, they had a bottle of water there, and the scientist set up electric eyes. So anything that would happen with that water, it'd make the bell ring.
Hmm.
So he had it sitting there, so he called
Pavlovian Terry.
Pavlovian eye.
Huh? Pavlovian eye.
Yeah.
Never mind, it's an old joke.
Oh, okay. and then when he got this all set up, he called Terry and said, okay, I'm ready, see what happens. So Terry just focused on that from Pennsylvania all the way to Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
In about 20 seconds, the bell started ringing.
Hmm.
And they subjected that water to a lab test, and they changed the oxygen-hydrogen bond angle.
Wow.
Know? So, you know, I tell my classes that you don't have to understand how anything works. All you got to do is go by proven procedure, you know. You don't know how dowsing works, but if you hold that stick right, you have the right intent,
mm-hmm.
and you ask the right question, you're going to be able to douse. You know, you just follow procedure.
I think that's wonderful, actually, and stop questioning so much and have your mind focused on your intent.
Right? Yeah, don't worry about it. Just, you know, kids can really douse. Kids can do all kinds of things that they don't know is impossible. You know, they just go ahead and do it.
So tell me this, Harold. Do all your kids, I don't know how many children you have, but do they all douse?
Not necessarily the way I do it, but, you know, they're all, they're all busy, you know, well, Joyce, my daughter, she runs Ozark Research Institute. I travel so much.
Mm.
She's the operations director here.
And oh, that's great. So she's obviously really in tune. She's attuned.
Yeah. And she does a great job. And my son is an optician, so he does, you know, makes eyeglasses and that kind of stuff. So.
Well, tell me a little bit more, if you will, or tell everybody at home more about your healing work. Can you give us some samples or examples of that? And
yeah.
Maybe give people some instruction on how they can use the information themselves.
Okay. You know, I talked a while ago about brain tumors. I'll tell you exactly how I remove a brain tumor. And we've done many brain tumors, believe it or not.
Hmm.
used, you know, before people, if they got a brain tumor, they just give up. They didn't think anything could be done because they get operated on, and a malignant tumor is the most prolific growing thing there is. If you leave one cell in there, the thing's going to grow back.
Mm-hmm. I know, it's really dangerous that way.
So if I'm working on a brain tumor, again, I've done many of them, I'll just bring the essence of that person here. Most of this is remote, even though I do hands-on.
Mm-hmm. So you say bring the essence of the person. Is that just the intention of being in a
tumor?
Yeah,
I just reach out and just bring the essence of them here.
Okay.
They can be wherever they are. And believe it or not, 90% of the time I can describe what that person looks like in real life just by having them. What I do, I bring the essence of them here and set them on the floor in front of me with their back to me. And I do mechanical things. I find this zipper at the corner of the left eye, and I unzip it back over the left ear, behind the head, over the right ear, to the corner of the right eye, and fold that flap forward. And I can see both hemispheres of the brain.
Hmm.
And most of the time, I can tell exactly where that tumor is. Now, and I have other tools I'll have to tell you about, but this one tool is it's like a hose that comes from the highest, purest place in the universe, and it's like, I just call it God's healing energy, the most white, brilliant white liquid you've ever seen. And so what I do, I get a hold of the tumor with my left hand, I mean, depending on what if you're right or left-handed, I get a hold of the tumor. And, you know, I can do things that medical people don't have a clue. My fingers can go right down into the brain and it doesn't hurt the person, you know.
Right.
And I just squirt this white liquid on.
But it's not really your finger, it's your etheric finger.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my etheric fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And I just squirt this white liquid on the base of that tumor.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems to loosen up all the lesions. You do it very carefully. You just lift it out, not leaving one cell in there.
Hmm.
And I've done that many, many times. And, in fact, how I got involved with the... then I throw that harmless and formless to the universe. How I got involved with the National Institutes of Health research project,
mm-hmm.
There was a doctor in Chicago that called me one day. He was a regular medical doctor. He was a brain doctor, actually. And he said, I have a brain tumor, and if something's not done about it, it's going to kill me. And he said, I heard about some of the work you guys are doing. Would you work on my brain tumor? And I said, sure, I will. And all I ever need, if I'm going to work on you, is your name, your gender, your approximate age, and what the problem is. Those four things.
Hmm.
Because I don't want to know too much about you. If I know that your mother locked you in the closet and beat you every day, then my logical mind would get in the way. You know, I'd
mm-hmm.
try to figure out stuff. So I don't want to know anything. I just want to know those four things. And so I just got that information from him, and I just brought the essence of him down here, and I opened up the top of his head, and I could see that tumor on the left front lobe. And that's the way I got it. I got a hold of it with my left hand, got this hose with the white liquid, and I just gently squirted that on there and pulled it out and threw it to the universe. And
the white liquid is just your creation.
Yeah. Well, that's got a story, too. I'll tell you about that just in a minute. But it's a wonderful thing. It's absolutely great. I use that on everybody I work on.
Hmm.
But anyway, his tumor left. He had another MRI, and they can't find that tumor anyplace.
Hmm.
And so he called and said, can I come down there and you guys can teach me something? He's a medical doctor, and I enjoy doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So he came down and stayed 4 or 5 days, and then he sent another female medical doctor who had also a brain tumor down, and we worked on her. And, we've had good success. But this hose is it's an amazing thing. The way that came about, my system, which is God and my angels, my spirit guides, just the whole universal energy, gives me tools. They give me things that I understand because they know that I'm mechanical, so they give me those things that I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And
like screwdrivers and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And hoses and vacuum hoses and all that stuff.
Okay.
And so I was at the West Coast Dowsing Conference that we're going to talk about here, that we're going to next week, or a week after next, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Next week, actually.
Huh?
Next week.
Yeah, next week, yeah. And so a woman came up from Santa Cruz, and she said, you know, my husband, who's an avid golfer, had to have a back operation 2 years ago, and then another and another. And she said, it's really painful, and he's not swinging a golf club since the first operation. And she said, he really misses that. Would you, if I brought him up, would you work on him? I said, sure, bring him on up. I tuck him up to my room, and I'm bouncing his energy field, and now I'm putting energy just from my hands into the wound. The last operation only been a couple of weeks prior to that. It was still red, and the swelling was there and all that. So when I'm working on this guy, this hose fell down. Just white, it's like a clear plastic hose with the most brilliant white liquid in it, and it's got this nozzle on the end of it. So what I was supposed to do, in my mind's eye, squirt this stuff all the way on that, on his back where that bad, where the operation has been.
Hmm.
And in my mind's eye, that red went away, the swelling went down, and so I just let him go after I got finished with him, and I just said, thanks, guys. You know, I just, it's always important to be thankful for any little thing that you get.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that must be God's healing energy. That's from the highest, purest place in the universe. Well, the next afternoon, he came back up there, walking without his cane. He was just walking normal. And he looked me up and he said, what did you do to me yesterday? He said, I haven't felt this good since long before that first operation. He said, I played golf with my two son-in-laws this morning. I won $30 off of each of them. And he was really happy. So I told him about this hose. He said, you know, that's amazing. He said, I am a pilot. This is all true. I found out since. He said, I'm a pilot. He said, the last time the Dalai Lama was in the United States, I flew his crew over the United States. He said, I'm a student of ancient Tibetan religion and that kind of thing. He said, I want you to know that hose is one of the three most powerful ancient Tibetan healing techniques there is. It was written about in this book 1,500 years ago.
Oh, my.
So I just wondered where you got it, you know, which proves the point. You don't have to be an ancient Tibetan anything. You know, you just have to put yourself in a position to receive that stuff, you know. It's really an ethical thing. You can't BS people. You just do the best that you can do, and the system will give you exactly what you need to work on anybody.
That's a wonderful story. Well, tell me how you got in touch with your own spirit guides. Are you working consciously with them, or?
Yeah, they're around me all the time, and I talk to them a lot, and they talk to me. I mean, it's not words. It's thoughts, or it's knowledge that just comes in, you know?
But didn't come because you got a whack over the head with a 2x4, came.
No,
you?
No.
Not a shock of any kind.
Yes. You know, our scientific advisor, Ed Stillman, ASD had a fund to do some research with. So Ed was having this doctor in Sedona, this PhD, do brain frequency studies on dowsers. This doctor's normal job was to go out on the reservation and do brain studies on Navajo Indian males with a drinking problem.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so Ed got him working with some dowsers, and he was working on me, and I was doing, you know, I was sitting there in a meditative state. But when I'm in a meditative state, I'm also conscious. You know, your brain works in basically four bands of frequency, and they're called beta, alpha, theta, and delta.
Mm-hmm.
Beta is when you're totally alert and wide awake, and that's when you're doing your job. And that's from 14 to 26 hertz per second, or depending on who you talk to. Somebody says 14 to 40, but usually they agree it's it's around 14 to 26 hertz per second, that band. Next one down is called alpha, and your brain slows down, and that's from 7 to 14 hertz per second. Then, and that's when you just kind of daydream and float out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one down is called theta, and that's from 3 to 7, so your brain is really slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
And theta is when you're in a good deep sleep, and that's when you dream. And that's the only frequency that you dream in. That's when you have rapid eye movement, you know, your eyes flutter, and all that. That's in theta. Delta is the lowest, and that's a half hertz to 3 hertz per second. Your brain is absolutely slowed down so much, and that's when you're really kind of zonked out.
Mm-hmm.
So when he had this equipment on me, they put a skull cap on there with 21 sensors on it. Two of them are control sensors, but you get 19 streams of information off your brain at any one time, and that reads through the equipment onto a computer screen. And so I was aware of everything going on, and he was kind of amazed at, because when I'm doing this remote healing, I was 80% in delta, in that very lowest frequency.
Hmm.
But I'm always, you never can get such so low that you're always in control, and you always have 5 or 10% of the beta going. That's their survival part. It's always there. Nobody
so you can slip
either.
Out of a deep trance if you need to.
Yeah, that's what it does.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of coast when you're asleep, but a little noise, that'll wake you right up.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he couldn't hardly believe that I was in delta that much, but I still knew what was going on. I could hear him talking, and I could, you know. He asked me, he said, "Mr. McCoy, have you ever had a brain injury?" And I haven't. But I think he found some other dowsers and healers that could get down into that delta also.
Well, do you actually meditate quite a bit, don't you?
Oh, every day. I don't think I could get by if I didn't meditate every day.
So when you're talking about the brain patterning and the delta and so on, that can be because you've created the ability to get in there through practice, eh?
Yeah, I can get in delta in about 30 seconds.
Great.
You know, I can just sit down and just zone out.
So tell me this, it's when we're in delta, that's when the healing, that's when you can do remote healing better.
That's my belief.
And that's when we manifest better, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think the visualization happens in the beta, in that conscious part.
Mm-hmm.
But then it feeds down to the delta, and I believe it's just my belief that that's where the energy goes out.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like radio waves. You know, if you're on a radio or television, if you're looking at a television, that's broadcast at a couple of 250 megacycles.
Mm-hmm.
But then it hits the antenna, and it's a radio frequency transformer, which brings it down to something they call intermediate frequency, and that brings it on down to an audio, so you can hear it.
Mm.
And that's kind of the way this is. I think the beta is like the beta is kind of like the transmitter, but it goes through all these stages getting down to that delta so you can really work with it.
Hmm. Tell me this, Harold. Thank you for that. Do you work on yourself? Can you work on yourself?
I teach people how to do that.
You see, that's what I was thinking. Can you give people at home some kind of exercise or something? I mean, this is very inspiring, especially with the health care cost.
Yeah,
it's a great
that is
thing
bad.
To learn, huh?
Well, it's really good to, I teach people all over the world and all over the, you know, I've been to Australia twice, I've been in New Zealand, I'm going to Asia in November, I'm going to visit 5 different Asian countries.
My,
starting in Taiwan, and I'll go over into mainland China, and to Burma, and to slipped my mind. But anyway, I'm going to visit 5 countries.
So everyone can learn this, right?
I believe everybody can learn it, yeah. I really do, because it's just imagination. You know, people get confused with visualization or imagination or or meditation or concentration, you know, and I don't know what to call it, but it's, you just got to get down there and see it happen.
You know something, Harold? I love the fact that you don't really know and that we don't really need to know.
You don't need to know. You go just by procedure.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you do. And anyway, you asked me how, okay, if I, the way I think the body works, and I've proven it to myself 1,000 times, the body is controlled by the autonomic nervous system. Your pituitary, your pineal glands, along with the brain center, the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus is the most important thing in your entire system. And it communicates with the pituitary, the pineal, and both hemispheres. In turn, the pituitary communicates with 18 different systems down in your body. Your liver, your pancreas, your whatever. That's 18 different systems. Now, medical people don't know this, but that's what my guides have shown me. The pineal communicates with 9 different systems. And I know where a lot of those systems, I just call them communication channels. And so, if I look up there, and the way I do it, I'll have you opened up, the top of the head opened up, and I'll clean off all the emotional energy on top of your hemisphere, because just in living a lot of times, you get so much emotional energy piled up there that it clogs up these communication channels. It just shorts them out. So now, if your pituitary can't tell your pancreas to produce insulin, it don't do it.
All right, okay.
So now then, I clean off all this congestion up there. And I then just
well, just sec, that's really interesting, because it's the emotional congestion that can block those flows.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that...
That's good information, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that if you never had any unresolved emotional stuff up there, you would never get sick.
Hmm.
It's just, it's very, it's amazing. Anyway, and then I can, in my mind's eye, I can open up between the hemispheres and I can pop down underneath there. So I'm really small, I'm under there. And I can get those master glands all cleaned out. You know, I get all those communication channels working.
Hmm.
So if you've been having, and I have helped a lot of people with diabetes and with, you know, just all kinds of stuff, because if that pituitary can't tell your system to produce digestive fluids, then you're going to get digestive problems, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And emotion, like stress, causes your body to produce acid. And acid gets down into your intestines, and you'll have, you know, irritable bowel syndrome or bleeding bowels, or the worst thing you have is Crohn's disease, you know? It's just a matter of the emotional stuff causing all this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the reason that we have so many successes, because that's the first thing we do. We go up there and we get rid of all that emotional energy and we clean out, you know, all those communication channels. And I lead people to do that. I lead them how to work on themselves. I get them in a meditative state.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, I'll get them in a pretty deep meditative state. I count down. I say, okay, you are spiritual beings in a physical body. So what I want you to do, I want that spiritual being stand up, leave the body sitting there. I want you to walk around behind that body, put your hands on its head. Now it feels like you're standing behind somebody else. And then I lead them through unzipping the head and folding it forward and getting all that emotional energy out of there. And I'd lead them through that whole thing, get them down underneath the hemispheres and clean out all those communication channels. And believe it or not, 90% of the people can do that. You might not think you can, but you really can. It's all imagination anyway. You know?
But I think that something that's really valuable is getting into that meditative state as well.
Yes, it is, yeah. And so...
So we can actually, I mean, the way you're talking, I'm going, we can actually communicate, connect with beings all through the collective, all through human consciousness, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Whether it's on or off. Did you know anything about extraterrestrials? Have you worked with beings there?
With who?
With beings who are from other galactic centers.
Not that I know of. I'm busy enough working on those from this, this system.
But there's really no time and space, and then you're saying that we can have this impact by taking charge. And I really like some of the stuff I read about, well, going back to water. So we can actually clean up the world, right?
Yeah, we get enough people doing this. We really can. My main concern, and we do world healing meditation, but my main thing is healing people and animals. I heal so many animals.
Wonderful.
And it's not me healing them anyway. I just say, you know, I'm just a conduit. I'm just part of the process. I'm just sitting there, and it's not me doing the healing. I might be doing the visualization, but the system, what I call the system, does the healing.
Hmm. I want to ask you one more question before we have to sign off for
okay.
now. What about politics? Do you think that we could have a bigger impact on the, what is it, quality, the mutual respect in politics in this world?
Well, you might if, you know, you couldn't get a, you get 50 people in a room, and you try to do something, you know, you're going to make half of them mad. It's like, I never talk about politics or religion, you know. Because it's negative, or politics especially is negative.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just don't discuss that in the class. Now, if you want to work on your own and try to do something, then that's, because even one person is pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. That's a wonderful thing to think at this point
yeah.
in history. Oh, I've so enjoyed and I've learned a great deal from you, Harold, and looking forward to seeing you at the West Coast Dowsers Conference in Santa Cruz.
I look forward to it, yeah.
Yeah, and what are you going to talk on when you're there?
Well, you know, I'm going to do two classes, probably the same thing, but I just call it, I think they call it healing meditations.
Okay.
And then I'm going to do a post-conference one-day workshop.
Oh, great.
Where I'll be leading people through all these meditation states.
And which day will that be?
That'll be, the conference is over when? On the
9th, I think.
So yeah, that'll be on the 10th.
Great.
The day following the conference.
And people can tune into the West Coast Conference, westcoastdowsers.org, to find
yep.
all the information. But also, what is your website?
My website is www.ozarkresearch.org.
That's O-Z-A-R-K, research.org.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great. Well,
and we do, we're a membership organization. We've got members in close to 30 countries all over the world, and you know we're just growing. It's just a good thing.
Well, you've certainly taken the word dowser and given it a much more powerful meaning, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, it's the same energy. If you can actually accurately locate an underground flowing water vein, you can with just a little shift in focus, you can remove a brain tumor. That's how simple it is.
I'm going off to practice.
Yeah, you can do it.
All right, Harold, we will see you next week.
Okay, nice talking to you.
Wonderful talking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. Wow, that was Harold McCoy. Wasn't that exciting? Are you all going to run around and become healers now? We're going to take a break for just a couple of minutes, and then we're coming back to meet Alan Handelsman, who's also a dowser, and we're going to talk to him, and he's also a funny man. And he does the resonance tuning. He does EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique. I can't remember what the F stands for. And he does a lot of healing work himself and is a hypnotherapist. But he's also a humorist. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And next week, Radiance by Design is going to be a call-in show about you. We're going to talk about energy in you and changes you're making. And then on Paradigm Shifters next week, we're going to have a wonderful person whose name is, and I forget her name, it's Rowena, I'll get it when I come back with Alan Handelsman, because she's really exciting. She's she really intuitively understands a lot about the cosmic energies and so on, and has created some divination cards which are really entrancing in themselves and will take you in to a lot of your subconscious awakenings. So we'll see you in about 4 minutes. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you for tuning in. If you can, hold on to our paradigm shifter, Alan Handelsman. Even though we're running late, he'll be on at 5:15. Let's go.